You are listening to an edited version of Get Radio's Business Brunch, which airs every Sunday at 11 a.m. on DAB Digital Radio across Oxfordshire and online at getradio.co.uk. For copyright reasons, we cannot play the songs mentioned in the show. But for more info and Business Brunch related content, head over to getradio.co.uk.
Get Radio's Business Brunch with Ben Thompson, sponsored by the Oxford Business Community Network. The friendly, no-pressure networking group for Oxfordshire's business people. Discover our membership packages to help you grow your business at obcn.co.uk.
Good morning, this is Get Radio and welcome to the Business Brunch with me, Ben Thompson, founder of Thompson & Terry Recruitment. Every week during this show, we share stories, expertise and knowledge of business leaders large and small with you, the listener. And this week is a really interesting one. So on today's show, we're going to be talking about the future of sales. And to do that, we're joined by three absolute local experts. Annalee Thompson-Horner of Sandler, Natasha Ellard of Urban Element and Christina West of BidQuest. This is the Business Brunch with me, Ben Thompson. We're going to be talking all about sales after this. Get Radio. Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. If you are just tuning in, today we're talking about the future of sales. And to do that, we're joined by three absolute local experts who, if you don't know already and don't follow their social medias, absolutely, that's your homework. So let's start by introducing them. So Annalee, I'm going to start with you first, if that's okay. For those who aren't familiar with you and your business, please introduce yourself.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, Ben. My name is Annalee Thompson-Horner and my company is Sandler, and we help companies grow, scale. We are a management consulting and training company that works with businesses, whether they want new clients to help upskill their teams as well.
Amazing. And second up, Natasha, similarly with you and indeed Urban Element.
Hi, Ben. My name's Natasha. I run a digital marketing agency called Urban Element, and we work with businesses that are great at what they do, but when it comes to their marketing, they might be concerned that they're not seeing a return on their marketing spend, whether that's e-commerce sales or inquiries or revenue, or they might be a little bit worried that their marketing tends to be a little bit ad hoc, maybe even a bit sporadic, and that's often because they don't have a plan or a strategy in place. Or they might just be a little bit uncertain as to where to start. You know, should they be investing in their SEO? Should they be running Google Ads? Do they need to be mindful of what's going on with AI? Do they need a presence on all the different social platforms from Instagram through to Snapchat, TikTok, Facebook, etc.? So we help clients with those kind of challenges.
Amazing. And last but not least, Christina.
Ben, hi, I'm Christina West and my business is BidQuest. And at BidQuest, I help small and medium-sized enterprises who are wanting to win work in the public sector. So at BidQuest, we offer bid writing and management services. But what I think is also really important, perhaps more important, is actually working on the strategic stuff that has to happen first and helping SMEs understand that when the tender lands, that isn't the starting gun. Actually, a lot of work needs to happen before that around relationship development and positioning within your market, differentiating yourself from competitors in your industry. So I love working with small businesses and finding out about their innovations and their services and helping them to navigate what often seems like a very complex world of public sector procurement.
Amazing. Christina, I'm going to pick on you first, if that's okay. Don't worry, Annalee and Natasha, you're not off the hook. As with Annalee and Natasha later in the show, you have chosen a song for our listeners this morning. What is your song choice and why have you picked it?
Oh, I feel like I need to explain it first because it's a very, very cheesy selection. So I've chosen a band that I grew up with. I went to their farewell tour. My little girls love them too now. But the song that I've chosen specifically relates to bidding and the world of procurement because it sends a message around relationship development, building that relationship with your client, really understanding them so that you know what they want, what they really, really want. And you're not going to waste your precious time bidding for something that you can't win. So my song choice is Wannabe by the Spice Girls.
Oxfordshire Station, Get Radio.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. If you are just tuning in, today we're talking all about the future of sales. And to do that, we're joined by three absolute local experts. We're joined by Annalie of Sandler. We're joined by Natasha of Urban Element and Christina of BidQuest. So, Annalie, I'm keen to start with you, if that's okay, with probably just quite a big question to set the tone. What is the future of sales?
Yes, a very big question. Well, I think one thing we can't get away from when it comes to the future of sales is AI. AI is here to stay in sales. And I think what businesses need to realize is that if they haven't embraced it, they're going to be left behind. But they need to make sure that they understand that the high performing professional sales people and teams are finding AI and finding a way to use it in their business to increase their efficiency and effectiveness. And there's no point hoping it's going to go away, because unfortunately it's not. And if we ignore it, what happens is our salespeople start using it and they use it in the wrong place at the wrong time and do all the things Chrissy just said we should do. They do the wrong part of it and they use it to detract from relationships. Salespeople use it to do the stuff they don't want to do, particularly prospecting. So I think the future of sales is people still want to speak to people. We haven't, you know, that hasn't changed. And particularly if you are in a high value technical sale, people are needed to help the buyer transition through through that difficult process.
No, totally, totally. And that's a really great open from Annalie. Natasha, where does this all fit into the marketing side of things? Where does marketing fit into the future of sales? And where does AI fit into that, as brilliantly set up by Annalie?
Yeah, a really good question, Ben. And I think obviously we're earlier on in that process than Annalie. So we're kind of, you know, bringing those inquiries into the funnel. And absolutely, AI is having a big impact on that side of things. So we're talking about AEO, so answer engine optimization, GEO, which is generative engine optimization. And the difference is AEO is the kind of stuff that you see at the top of the search engine results. So that's the little snippets that AI generates. And then you've got GEO, which is when people are cited in things like ChatGPT or Perplexity or Gemini. And so optimizing for visibility in both those areas is really, really key from a marketing perspective to keep generating those inbound leads that then ultimately the sales team would need to convert.
Absolutely. And Christina, in your intro, you spoke about the sale only start or the sale starts 6 months before the tender opens. Just build on that in terms of what are some of these things that organisations or public organisations are looking for over that period of time prior to the tender?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, any public sector buyer that is going through the process of procuring a new service or to purchase products, they are going to be doing their homework. There is a very specific process that they have to go through. There's legislation under the Procurement Act 2023 that they need to adhere to. They're not going to go and spend their money with any old organization that they know nothing about, basically. They need to feel confident that their procurement decision is a safe one, because they can get pulled up on it later if they don't. So what's really important is that anyone that's wanting to sell into the public sector, that they are familiar and visible to these buyers. Because if your bid is going to land cold on their desk and they've never heard of you before, they've got no brand trust or awareness of you in the market, then no matter what the scoring mechanism is for that particular procurement process, instantly you're being compared against suppliers who they are familiar with, who they do know, who they do have trust in that brand. And so you're already a little bit behind. But also, as part of the public sector procurement process, there are market engagement events that's mandated now under the Procurement Act. And so there are opportunities ahead of the tender going live to meet the buyer, to provide some information about your business, to even influence the specification that they're going to be pulling together from their own market research. So you want to be positioning yourself early so that you're not a surprise when you land on their desk.
Really interesting. What's your take on this, Annalie?
Well, I think to build upon what Chrissy said there is there's a really interesting Gartner study that came out in 2020 that said what buyers are looking for, and this was taking a complex B2B sale in place, is they were looking for a trusted industry expert who was going to guide them through it. And that, backs up all the stuff they need, that brand recognition, they need to understand who you are that we were just hearing. And it was actually 86% of buyers, that's what they were looking for. But the study was so interesting because it then said what they actually got was, I think it was 65% of the buyers felt like they actually self-navigated it and no one was helping them. So they were just like that, just got that cold stuff on their desk, or if it wasn't a tender or bid, they just felt like they had to figure it out, which means it becomes transactional. And the problem with it being transactional for all of us on this call is it becomes about money, not about the value that people are giving. So I think it's about building all the stuff we heard here in the future of sales is technology helps us, but they still want somebody who understands their business deeply, so that makes life easier for the buyer ultimately.
And Annelie, I just want to stay with you and just talk about the training side, your specialist area. How do we differ? How has training salespeople differed since the future of sales?
Yes. I've had Sana training in the UK here for 23 years, and it used to be all face to face. Like, people would turn up, they'd do their training, they'd laugh at my jokes, they'd leave. And I think now it's changed that we are all used to jumping on a video call. So actually, the beauty of this is the risk and the time it takes in attending a training session has gone down. So it means that people can just jump on and take stuff bite size. And in sales, this means they can take a particular bit, they can take it, they can learn it, they can come back and they can give you real-time updates in their sales pipeline. They can go, right, this happened, what should I do? Whereas before it was too spaced out, that the real-time feedback and therefore the implementation in their world just wasn't there. It wasn't as applicable. So I think technology has really helped us with that. I suppose the adage is the salespeople do have to turn up. Otherwise, I'm afraid it's less successful.
Oh, totally. And Natasha, I think the word trust has been used quite a few times already. How do you build trust online? What are some of the things you can do?
There's lots you can do, Ben. So things like reviews are obviously really important. Case studies can be really helpful because it's sort of that third party endorsement. But I'm glad you mentioned trust because there is an acronym. It's EEAT, which has become really, really important, particularly from an AI search visibility perspective. And the E stands for experience, the other E stands for expertise, and then A for authoritativeness, and T for trustworthiness. So actually, that's really important that you are gathering things like reviews and that you are mindful of case studies and regularly updating those. And all of those things will ultimately build trust, which is really important when it comes to being visible in, say, ChatGPT or Gemini or any other platforms from an AI perspective.
No, totally. And Chrissy, I'm keen to stay with AI if that's okay, because I appreciate Annelie and Natasha have made some really great points there. Where does AI fit into some of these government contracts and government tenders? What are some of the things we should and shouldn't do?
Well, AI is a huge topic in my world. It has been for the last couple of years, I'd say. What's really interesting to me is there is a huge spectrum of attitude and adoption among the bidding community. So what we see in terms of guidance from Cabinet Office is that AI is permitted. You are allowed to use AI in the development of your proposal. That is confirmed by government. But what's really interesting is the sort of the cultural aspect. And there are so many procurement officers out there who are very open about their opinions around the use of AI. I've seen so many posts on LinkedIn from procurement officers saying, I hate it when I see an AI signal. And that's a real red flag because, if you've got government providing this guidance, yes, you can use it. But then the procurement officers who are scoring the bid saying, we don't like it when we see it, where does that leave suppliers? So you see suppliers using AI, but are trying to hide their use of AI at the same time. Which can be a real faff for a start, and can be a bit dangerous as well. But from my perspective, I am an advocate for the use of AI when it has been used appropriately. And I think there's a huge assumption in my industry that AI is used mostly for writing because, the bid process is a huge amount of writing in many cases. actually, the use case that I see that's even more powerful than that is research and being able to really drill down into a specific market and understand your customer, but also understand your competitors as well. It's also the adoption of AI in scoring your own bid before it goes in to a client so that you can provide the scoring criteria, your response, and get an idea of how you're likely to score, help you to develop some scenarios around pricing. Well, if I bid at this amount and someone else bids at this amount, how is that likely to affect the scoring based on this scoring criteria? So there's so many ways you can use AI aside from writing alone, and I think none of us like to see AI slop. So it's a fascinating subject. I could talk about it for ages, but it is very much present in my industry. It's something that I would say we need to lean into, like Hannah Lee, and not ignore. It's not going away, and it is a huge leveler, I would say, for SMEs in particular, who are up against the big corporates that have got teams of 20, 30 bidding professionals writing against a little SME who has no time to be doing all of this. AI can really, really help level that playing field when it's used properly.
No, really, really insightful. Annalie, I'm going to pick on you. Chrissy set a high bar earlier. What's your song choice and why have you picked it?
Well, you know, I think sometimes in sales, we can get a lot of rejection. It can feel like it's quite hard work. It's, you know, one of the only industries where people tell us no all the time. So I think sometimes we need to be able to let our hair down, have a bit of a good dance around the office just to get over it. So I picked one of my favourites, which is an Avril Lavigne song. It's called Here's to Never Growing Up. It's a great one to dance around the office to.
This is the Business Brunch Podcast from Get Radio. Sponsored by the Oxford Business Community Network. Discover our membership packages to help you grow your business at obcn.co.uk.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. If you are just tuning in, today we're talking about the future of sales, a topic that's important for every business. And really, really delighted to be joined by three absolute local experts to talk about that. So we're joined by Annalie Thompson-Horner of Sandler Training. We're joined by Natasha Ellard of Urban Element and Christina West of BidQuest. So Annalie, I'm just keen to bring the conversation to recruitment, which feels a bit weird, having been owned a recruitment business for 12 years and no longer a recruiter. How has recruitment changed? So we're talking about the future of sales over your 20 plus years of running the business. Should we be recruiting for different things in our salespeople to prepare for the future of sales?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I think one thing that has fundamentally changed in sales recruitment over the last 20 years is it is no point looking for that salesperson's little black book anymore, because actually LinkedIn has opened up, you know, people's contacts. You know, if we in the past, you could have a really senior sales executive who had been in the industry for years, who knew everyone, and that was a safe bet. Nowadays, that's just an expensive way to lose a lot of money quickly for somebody who isn't going to change with the times. So I think what has changed in sales recruitment is we need to be looking for people who are happy to adapt to technology, but who are still personable enough to understand how to communicate via video, to be able to still interact with people, you know, in person, to use the phone. Like, if we look at the actual split of, you know, millennials entering the who are in the workplace, stuff like, if you look at restaurant websites, if they have a call button for booking a table versus doing it online, if it's only call, they get hardly anyone is booking reservations. If they can do it online and there's no social interaction, people are doing it, and that is led by millennials. But in the workplace and sales, they have to be able to pick up the phones. They have to be able to go, well, I can't just WhatsApp my clients. They're not necessarily going to come back to me. So they need to be able to put some of their fears around the phone to the side to make effective outbound calls, I would say. And that's one of the biggest things that's getting in the way. And, you know, and often they need a bit of training around that. Sure, that's an easy bit. You know, the how-tos, they've still got to be able to do it. And I would say the thing that just adds on to that is the company itself also has to be fostering a culture of accountability. So they have to be, you know, yes, trusting their team that they do what they say they're going to do, but they have to have the right support and structure in place so that when there is a problem, people aren't left floundering, trying to cover it up and hope they don't get found out.
Really interesting. And Natasha, I really liked that example that Anne-Lee gave there in terms of like the restaurant bookings. If it's just a telephone number, you're going to get a lot less bookings. But equally, we need to talk to people. How do you manage that from a marketing perspective in terms of what you want as a business, e.g., to talk to people, but potentially what the customer wants, e.g., to fill out an online form? How do you balance that?
Yeah, it's a really interesting one, Ben, and a really interesting example Annalie used just then, and so very true. I think from a marketing perspective, it's also really easy to lose sight of what the end user or your ideal client is perhaps needing, and sometimes you kind of prioritize your own what you like the look and feel of. Particularly when it comes to websites, we see this a lot actually. It's, oh, I like the look of this website, and we'd like to replicate that. So one of the things we always encourage people to do is to put yourself in the position of your ideal client or your end user, and actually think about what is it they need to see, what are they looking for, how do they need to interact with, for example, your website, or what's going to resonate with them on social media, on LinkedIn, or any other platform for that matter. So really thinking about your ideal client, your end user, and what it is they need, rather than perhaps what it is you like, and what appeals to you. So I think that's quite an important thing.
Amazing, amazing. I've got a question for Chrissy, but I'm going to stay with you for a moment, if that's okay, Natasha, just because I think that, in fact, Annalie would give a good impact. An analogy that I once heard is marketing to everyone is like waving in the dark. You know what you're doing, but nobody else knows what you're doing, which is an analogy I loved. If we think about public sector, so a lot of businesses listening will be very interested in public sector contracts. A lot of businesses will also have SME clients. How, from a marketing perspective, do you market to multiple aliases, whether that be for the purpose of this, let's use a big government contract and the small independent? How do you go about that? And I'll start with you, Natasha, and then go to Chrissy and Annalie, if that's okay.
Yeah, I think, Ben, it comes back to what I mentioned before, which is being really clear on who it is that you are actually marketing to. And you can segment that market. So, like you say, if you are actually wanting to appeal to SMEs and then maybe larger, for larger contracts, you've got a totally different audience. You can appeal to both. But it's just being aware of those audiences and tailoring your message to them. So when it comes to social media, having one tone of voice and one type of messaging for one audience, and another tone of voice and another type of messaging for another audience. And then when it comes to your website, there's some really clever things you can do to particularly if you've got two or three different audiences, to kind of split your website into areas that cater for those individual audiences. So there's quite a bit you can do from a marketing perspective in that sense. And it's not uncommon either. We see it quite a lot with businesses that they do have lots of different audiences that you do have to appeal to.
What's your take, Chrissy?
Not sure I understand your question from the bid perspective. Would you be able to
In
just.
terms of, you spoke about in your intro, in terms of the preparation happened 6 months out. So as a result of that, I presume that the procurement team would be looking at your website, would be looking at your marketing as part of that. How do you make yourself attractive to the SME audience just for the purpose of this, or two or three audiences at the same time as winning the bid, I guess, in the nicest possible way?
Interesting question. I think first thing I'd say really is that what's really cool about this panel discussion is that we've pulled together bid, sales, and marketing, and that's really the holy trinity of work winning in any organization, isn't it? And it's about working together across those three functions, not in silos, but working very collaboratively. It's from the public sector perspective, what's really key is risk aversion and feeling like you're making a safe procurement decision. And the way that you demonstrate that to a public sector buyer is through evidence. And that's evidence of previous contract history, of examples, case studies of where you've delivered a very similar service, a very similar product, program, whatever. You've done it really successfully. But it's not good enough to say, we've been doing this for 20 years. That's on its own not sufficient. You need to be talking about very specific examples of, we've done this before for similar clients that look like you. We've done an excellent job, and here's the evidence. This is the data that backs up what we're saying. So from a sort of pre-tender strategy perspective, there's a lot of networking, relationship development, turning up at events, being present, showing interest. It's not necessarily, from my experience, Annalie may disagree with me, but it's not showing up and giving a sales pitch. It's showing up and listening and really asking the right questions around what that client's challenges are, not coming across too salesy. And that's really important in public sector procurement, particularly because a lot of the time you're dealing with a very formal process and you're shut off from speaking to clients at a certain point when the tender goes live. So you've got to be quite careful in the way that you're interacting with your client, and you've got to be very targeted, I would say, in the way that you are dealing with them ahead of that procurement going live as well.
Natasha.
Yeah, I think just to pick up on something Chrissy said at the outset, there was about not working in silos. So talking about us here in particular, so the marketing, the procurement side of things, and the marketing side of things, I think that's a really key point that actually we do see in businesses a lot, is that they tend to work in silos rather than working collaboratively. And particularly at Urban Element, that's something we attempt to get our clients to do better, which is particularly sales and marketing talking together more regularly. If we can get that feedback loop from sales as to how the inquiries are actually how they're landing, how they're being handled, are they on profile? That has a huge impact on how successful the marketing is as well. So I thought that was an important point, Chrissy.
No, totally. Oh, and what about yourself, Annalie? What's your take here?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with the things both the ladies have said here. Like, as Natasha says, that feedback loop between sales and marketing is so important, and you have to work quite hard, often with the salespeople, to get that because, I love salespeople. I work with them day in, day out. But when a lead comes in and it's good, they put it down to their sales, them being a sales legend. And quite frankly, it's because, yeah, well, I sort of knew this person already. It was great. When it doesn't close, they're like, well, marketing gave me a bad lead. This is terrible. So definitely work together. And, like we said, we've got the Holy Trinity on here. And may I just add, guys, the Holy Trinity seems to be all women. Sorry, Ben, you're just putting this together. So,
I'm just enjoying observing.
like, hey, success leaves clues. Let's just leave that one there. But I think from a sales point of view to that, looking at the public sector and the SME in this example, is it builds upon what Natasha was saying there about segmentation. And I think it has to follow through into the sales team structure that there needs to be some sort of segmentation. If the company is large enough, it is best that they have a sales team, and that might only be one person who is in charge of enterprise or OEM or public sector procurement, and then someone else that deals with SME, because it's a different sales process. Like, a tender could take months, could take years, what they're going through, and they've had to do, as Chrissy says, a lot of different sort of softer relationship building. Completely agree, do not want to be turning up doing a sales pitch. That's one way to absolutely not win the tender very quickly. Whereas the SME will have a shorter salesperson, will have a shorter sales cycle, will be able to build larger relationships, but maybe to a different degree, to bring the business in. So segmentation, I think, is really important where possible.
Totally. No, really, really interesting. Natasha, I hope you're about to feel some pressure. Annalie and Chrissy set a very high bar. What's your song choice and why have you picked it?
Well, I think you've left the best to last because I feel like I have the best music choice here. but I've picked Lose Control by Teddy Swims.
Interviewing Oxfordshire's business leaders. This is the Business Brunch Podcast. Sponsored by the Oxford Business Community Network. Build relationships with the ultimate goal of growing your business. obcn.co.uk.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. I will let you judge who's got the best music taste here. I'm not possibly qualified to comment. But if you are just tuning in today, we're talking all about the future of sales with three absolute local experts. Annalie, I'm really keen to in this final section to really talk about people, if that's okay. And I think that something you touched on earlier, and or a phrase you used as a little black book, and that those days are maybe gone. I think one of the challenges that a lot of organizations struggle with is people by people, we know that, but actually, for a business to be successful long term, it needs to be bigger than the individuals in that business. How do you balance that factor of people buying people, but building the brand of the organization to not be reliant on that individual?
Great question. And I think we see that a lot, particularly when the business owner has started that company, they've done most of the sales, and now they're looking to that stage where they're thinking, for whatever reason, I need to not be in charge of this. That might be because they're looking to sell in the future or whatever, they're looking to expand. And I think the thing we have to realize is that when we're, you know, looking to grow our sales people, our sales team, is that the number one thing to look for in recruitment is, has this person got some experience of sales? Whether it's, you know, has they been growing up or their sales job, because actually, if they've got some experience of similar sales cycle, you can give them the rest of stuff. You can give them the company culture. You can give them the product knowledge. But, you know, I always like to use a car example. Like, yes, you might have someone that sold cars before, but are you Ford and you're trying to take on someone that's only ever sold Ferraris? That's actually a very different type of sales cycle, and they will have different expectations for what they're supposed to do. Whereas, you know, if someone is, you know, if you're Ford, you want someone who has sold a high value, you know, but frequent deal that people are coming in and expecting to buy the same day. What, you know, what's another similar industry to that? May it be houses or, you know, or whatever, but we can look at something similar. I think that's the thing we want to look for when we're expanding and making sure we have a common commercial language. So a sales process in place that we're holding the new person to, because like I said before, I love salespeople, but if the company does not have a sales process in place, the new person will come in and make it up as they go along to the best of their ability. And now it just dilutes the hard work that the previous person, founder, whoever was there, has been putting into making it successful.
Interesting. And Natasha, from a marketing point of view, how do you market the individual under the umbrella of people buying people, but also market the business and add longevity to that?
Yeah, I think it's a really good question, Ben. And I think there's a huge amount of value, obviously, in both. And you could argue that more recently, there's been perhaps more of a leaning towards marketing an individual, because like you say, people buy from people. And so people have been building up their personal brands as, say, for example, the face of the company. But we do encourage our clients to do both. So LinkedIn is a great example of where that's quite a clear divide. So you have a company page and you have an individual personal profile on LinkedIn. And we would typically encourage businesses to use both. And I mean, the beauty of having that personal profile is obviously you can build up a tone, and you can build up thought leadership, and you can build up that more kind of personal touch and personal piece. And then from a company perspective, you can kind of take on board a different tone of voice and position the company in a certain way. So there's lots you can do around that. And it's quite an interesting area from a marketing perspective as well.
And Chrissy, from a bid perspective, I appreciate there isn't necessarily a one size fits all, but how do you balance that as part of a bid, especially when it's not necessarily the owner that's part of this bid? So you're looking to go and win a 3-year contract with the NHS as a really good example. Yeah. How do you ensure that from a procurement point of view, you're alleviating those fears that X person may leave, but at the same time, from a bid point of view, you're showing the value of that really great talent that you have within your organisation?
Yeah, it's a really good point. And it is a constant challenge, actually, because often in a tender, you are asked as a supplier to provide CVs of your team. Well, you cannot guarantee that anyone that you are putting forward for the bid is definitely going to be sticking with the company for the next 3 years for that contract. You just can't. Not necessarily because they plan on leaving the company right now, but people get sick. People have go off and have a baby. And, you know, there's all sorts of reasons why someone might not be in that organization for the next 3 years. And so there needs to be an understanding, and you need to articulate in your response that you are providing indicative CVs of individuals within your organization. Should that person not be available, they will be not replaced, but there will be someone of equal caliber, of equal level of qualification that will be ready to step in and continue that contract. But it is a challenge. And and one that I've run into several times in my career is when you're dealing with senior managers in an organization who do not want their team's CV to be put forward. They say, nope, they are contracted to this particular project. We absolutely can't be putting their CV forward for other things. But to be able to demonstrate the caliber of your organization, you want to be putting forward your A team. You want to be putting forward the CVs of the individuals that are most aligned to that service. So there's always a balance to be struck.
No, totally. Really, really interesting. And I think as an ex-recruiter, I've only mentioned it three times so far on this show. I've always been a big believer in actually the more you can big up your people, the more you can build their own profile and the more that you can give them that real platform that they deserve. Actually, it's the right thing to do. And wouldn't we much rather have an amazing team that maybe you do lose one or two people in line with their aspirations in the future than have a low performing team that nobody wants, as horrible as that sounds. But Annalee, I'm really keen to talk about sales pipelines, if that's okay. Because I think that one of the things we particularly see within small businesses or very small businesses is we don't have enough work on, so suddenly we're cold calling and our marketing is full and amazing and we're desperate for work. We get busy and then we stop going to networking, or we stop doing X, or we cancel our Google ads or whatever. How should you ensure that your sales pipeline is consistent as it can be? And what's the approach there? And I think I'm more thinking from a very micro business point of view, because of course, you know, if an organization's working with the three of you, of course their sales pipeline will be perfect forever, won't it?
Obviously. Yeah, I think it's a great point. And we can look at really tactically, because small businesses do go through this boom and bust, because often once they've sold the client, they have to do the work as well. And that means that they don't have as much time for prospecting. So I think it's, I always relate it actually outside of work to like my triathlon training. So when I'm triathlon training, I've got the goal in the future of when the race is, and then I work backwards to what my plan is. When am I going to be doing those workouts? I've got a Monday at, you know, at 9 o'clock, I've got Tuesday at one, whatever the times are, I put them in my diary. It should be the same with prospecting. We should all have our goal for the year of, we want to get 8 new clients, whatever they are. And we'd have, you know, worked on our ideal client profile and all of that good stuff. But then to work out, okay, let's look at our diary and put in our times for prospecting, and also work out our prospecting mix. Because every company, doesn't matter if they're big, small, has between 3 and 5 lead sources. And the micro businesses might have to guess sometimes what their lead sources are, but they should be working between 3 and 5 every single month. When they're busy or not, it's just, think of it like dials. When they're not busy, they can do more of it. When they are busy, they just need to drip, drip, drip it over, so they still have that consistent stream of business coming in. But they need someone to help hold them accountable to it. And sometimes in a small business, we let ourselves off the hook. So they sometimes need another business friend who they can go, look, I need to do this every month. I need to, you know, go to this networking event and make these calls. Can you ask me at the end if I've done it or not? Because often the fear of letting someone else down is greater than our fear of letting ourselves down. And we just need to build that in and realize that sometimes we will believe our own data. We'll go, we're super busy, I didn't have time for it. When actually we know we should have done it.
No, totally. And I think this comes nicely onto marketing, doesn't it, Natasha? Because I think that there's a lot of really good advice out there, is that the best time to market is when a market is very strong and when we're really busy. But a lot of organisations can leave it too late. What's your input from a marketing point of view to ensure that those leads are continuing and your brand is staying strong?
Yeah, I think a big one, Ben, is consistency. And we see this quite regularly, that actually not just in micro businesses, you'd be surprised in larger businesses as well, that actually there is a lack of consistency. And I think I mentioned at the outset when I introduced what we do as a business, that one of the challenges people often face is that their marketing is quite sort of ad hoc or sporadic. And that's often because they don't have a plan or a strategy in place. So not dissimilar to what Annalee's saying from a sales perspective, is actually you do need to plan. And you need to have that bigger picture in mind. So that's the strategic piece, in order for the tactical stuff, which is the day-to-day or the week-to-week, to happen consistently. So that's a big thing we believe, you need to work on from a marketing perspective, is having that plan, that strategy in place, and then breaking it down into things that should be done on a monthly, on a weekly basis, and doing them consistently. Because what typically happens, which we've already discussed, is that when you get busy, these things sort of fall to the wayside. And then when you're no longer busy, there's a bit of a panic that kicks in. And actually, all of a sudden, you're then prolific across all these different platforms and you're sort of chucking mud at the wall, hoping some of it's going to stick. And obviously, it typically doesn't. So it's sort of looking at that piece around consistency. And we see it on LinkedIn as well. People are, posting regularly and then they disappear. And then they come back and post and then they disappear. And that's often, a symptom of what we're discussing.
No, definitely, definitely. And Chrissy, from a bid point of view, I think we've all been at events, or we've all dealt with organisations who really struggle because they missed out on this big bid, or a contract has come to the end. How can you build a pipeline of bids, and how can you prepare to win these big contracts, but actually almost have that insurance in place for you not to win the big contracts, and almost like that succession planning of contracts almost. Maybe that's the wrong phrase to use.
No, that makes sense. So what I've observed in working with small businesses is they tend to be very reactive to tender opportunities. And often the first question they come to me with is, where do you find the opportunities? What website should I be on? Which portal should I be signed up to? And they're paying a lot of money for tender searching portals and things, which are great when you're using them properly. But that's not the first question to ask at all, because if you're going in cold and you're bidding for stuff that's just landed, you're already too late in most cases. And so you're right, building out that pipeline is so important. So the way that the more established bid functions would approach this, there's multiple ways. There's your existing client base, where you've got your account managers who are talking to that team all day, every day. They can start to spot signals and point to the sales team. These guys are going to be procuring something soon. Your bid team needs to know about that. We're going to note that down. That's an opportunity. We're going to have a weekly call to check in with that account manager and see what's developing. So you've got stuff that you are picking up from existing clients. From non-existing clients, you can be looking at websites like Find a Tender Service. That is a free government website. There, all pipeline notices are published for upcoming public sector contract opportunities. Now, it does differ in terms of how much notice they give in each case, but it can give you an early enough signal that you could that will prompt you to go to a market engagement event and meet the buyer event to start getting engaged early. So I'd be looking at pipeline notices on Find a Tender Service. I'd be talking to existing clients to find out what their procurement timeline is looking like, and procurement plans. And then internally, having regular check-ins with the sales team, regular check-ins with the account managers who are doing the operational and delivery work too, because they have a lot of insight that you might not appreciate. And yeah, so it's almost like a multi-pronged attack, if you like.
Amazing, amazing. I cannot believe how quickly the time has gone, and we've got about a minute left, so I'm going to put pressure on the three of you. I would love to leave our listeners with a top tip. So 10 seconds each. In a sentence, what would be one lasting tip we can leave our listeners with, whether it be something fresh or something we haven't spoken about, starting with you, Annalie?
I think where I just left off, I think about the top 3 to 5 lead sources in your business. And if you're thinking you only have two, you don't. There's one more that you could be working on to grow your business.
Great advice, Natasha.
I think one of the things I would do is, from a marketing perspective, I would be inclined to think as commercially as possible. So often people think about marketing being perhaps a little bit fluffy. And one of the things we're always keen to do at Urban Element is to quantify the kind of results that you're getting from a marketing perspective. So that comes back to what we talked about earlier, which is that feedback loop with the sales team. So really making sure that you're getting that feedback from the sales team so that you understand how effective the marketing is. I think that's really, really important.
Amazing. And last but certainly not least, Chrissy.
One of my favorite sayings, if you like, in the bid community is bid less, win more. And it's about slowing down sometimes to speed up. What a lot of businesses out there tend to do is scattergun approach, bid for everything, cast the net wide, something's bound to land. And it's just not true. When you're dealing with a really, really structured process, a lot of written work, you can only afford to spend time on the things that you actually got a shot of winning. So it's about getting the strategy right from the beginning before you commit.
Amazing. Amazing. What a great way to end the show. So thank you so much, the three of you, for your time and wonderful contribution to the discussion. I wish we had another hour. But we are going to be back next week with some brand new guests talking about another topic impacting on local businesses. Also, just a reminder, you can listen to this show on the radio or online, 11 o'clock every Sunday. If you prefer podcasts, do watch out for the podcast version, which is released on every major podcast platform and is released on the Monday morning. Or if you would prefer to see my lovely guests, do look out for the video version, which goes out on the Get Radio Facebook page and the website every Tuesday. But for now, whatever you're doing in Oxfordshire, enjoy, and we'll see you next week.